Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Dell Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Jim McCormick, he's with Allendale, out of McHenry, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, all of our programming, in fact, to listen to on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. You can also find us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, and the NPR One app. Now, let's introduce a brand new panelist to our program. Jim McCormick is with Allendale. Jim, thanks so much for being with us. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, please?
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on. A little bit about my background. I'm a Purdue University grad from 1994 in agribusiness management. I worked for a little while for Central Soy as a grain buyer merchandiser, and then I started work here at Allendale in 1996 as a commodity broker, and now I'm their one of their senior brokers, and I help write the Allendale commentary every evening.
And when you worked for Central Soya, where did you work?
I worked out of their Fort Wayne facility as well as a Marion, Ohio facility briefly.
All right. So tell me what you think about the soybean drop in price this week in that case.
Well, today, first of all, it was more rain, in my opinion, to begin with. We saw the radar light up with rain this week, and that's kind of put some pressure on the market. And the objective was to hit that gap that we left way back on June 30th, and we filled that gap. We almost filled it this morning, and we bounced back. And I think a lot of people were excited, thinking, hey, we've hit a technical target. We're going to rebound. And the market actually is making a little bit of upward progress. And then what really hit the market late today, and I think may put pressure on to tomorrow, is fear of a trade war building with China again. President Trump is talking about gearing up, investigating China over perceived violations of property rights as well as trade, you know, dumping steel on our shores. And the reports are out there that China is going to gear up some countervailing measures, pretty much that they're going to restrict maybe U.S. bean imports as a way to retaliate. And when the market kind of got sense of that, I think that's what pressured the market pretty hard today.
Dell Durkles, your assessment of how the trade viewed the marketplace for soybeans?
Well, I won't disagree with anything he had to say there. I think, you know, the China trade fiction is one thing that's really kind of dominated off and on at different times in through here. But to be very blunt, when you look at the numbers for China, it basically comes down to a situation. You need the protein, where else you're going to go get it? And that really is just brutal honesty about it. In fact, you know, we can have short-term periods where maybe they push back against the U.S. and try not to buy anything. But when you look at the balance around the world, they just don't have a choice to avoid us if they want to buy the quantities they really want to need. But, you know, and looking at the bean trade itself, yeah, it's been a weather response this week. The rains that have come through, although, you know, we're an awful long way at this point from saying a crop has been saved at this juncture in time. And actually, when you look out to the longer range forecast, the 8 to 14 day, there's showing dryness creeping back down into the northern, northwestern, and towards the center of the Corn Belt. And I even picked up today from one forecaster that looks at long range stuff, and he said, you know, warmth and dryness coming back to the Midwest once again, it looks like.
Well, those are things that we have to consider. I also would like to hear your view of the marketplace for the week, Ellen Dearden, because it was a rough week for the soybeans.
Yeah, it was pretty darn ugly. And when you look at a technical picture of things, I mean, November beans this year have had a trading range of about $1.30 between 10.47 and 9.07. And really the downside market action this week has been, you know, considerable, but we are still in this 66% retracement of that move. I've got some downside objectives technically around this 9.50 area. I thought a close for the week below the gap that Jim discussed it goes down to 950, or had been down to 958 to 963. Really could have taken you down as low as about 915, but I prefer to think that we've got a stopping point about a dime below Thursday's close. We keep talking about weather pattern changes, but yet the eastern Corn Belt stays wet and the western Corn Belt, relatively speaking, stays dry.
So the weather pattern change then in your mind is just the cool temperatures, and that slows the process down.
Yeah, absolutely it does. The rain changes, the rainfall pattern has not changed, just temperature.
And in your mind, what does that do over the next month then to the crops?
Well, coolness is probably going to slow down maturation on corn. Coolness isn't going to change maturation that much on beans, but probably will hamper setting additional pods and seeing additional blooming. So I don't think it's a good thing to have extremely cool temperatures, at least this first half of August. Who knows what the second half is going to bring.
Jim, next week on Thursday, the United States Department of Agriculture will release the first crop progress or crop production report of the year for corn and soybeans. Does Allendale have a set of targets?
Yeah, we do. We're running our numbers, and actually we just released them today. Right now for the yield on the bean yield, we're guessing that at, right now we're using about a 46.9 yield is what our pricing or yield models are suggesting for beans. So we are looking for a slight revision down. The corn yield, we're looking for it to come in, or we're looking for the corn yield to end up being about a 163.3 yield. Now, I want to stress, these are numbers that we're looking at for in production numbers. These aren't necessarily what we assume the government's going to show on next week, because historically we found they tend not to be quite as aggressive as what our model suggests. But, yeah, so but we're looking for a pretty aggressive cut when it's all said and done.
Dale, how about you? What are you working with today?
Right now, I'm just in the business of trying to figure out what the USDA is going to say next week, because to me, that's the only thing the industry really cares about. The one interesting twist in here, and I've looked at both FC Stone's and Informa's numbers, they weren't far different. Informa here today was 165.9 on corn, 47.3 on beans. And actually, USDA tends to come pretty close to that. I'm using a 165 flat and a 47.2. And, you know, the impossibility or the difficulty, I guess, in trying to figure out what the USDA will say on this particular report is that for corn and beans both, it's really primarily a population count. And then you're just trying to bias, you know, how you think the farmer portion of that survey is going to impact, you know, the yield results they get from the models of the data they collect out in the field. So it's a real difficult report, the August one is, to guess what they're going to say.
Yeah, so USDA does counts, Ellen Dearden. They'll give us numbers on population, on ears, in fact, that they find in the field. Do you think that the range of weather we've had across the United States will impact very much this year compared to previous years, how many ears they do find, and what do you think that'll look like?
Well, on the corn side of things, yes, but I also think that just the field population of the numbers of stalks are going to be down. So that should impact where they come in on this particular report. Their starting point at 171, or roughly speaking, was a rather lofty starting point given the planting conditions that we saw. And one of the things that Schlesinger from the state of Illinois pointed out is that they do use planting dates. They do use populations as one of their five main factors. So I think we have to look that we're not going to be at 170, but I don't believe that we're going to see USDA lop off 5 acres on this particular report. If they do, they may be in line with what I feel that's probably out there, but I don't believe USDA will be that aggressive.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one thing that we did some research looking at Allendale, what we found in the last 23 years, the USDA lowered the yield 11 times from July to August. Okay, if you throw out the 2012 drought year where they lowered it all the way down to 148, about a 15% drop in yield. If you exclude that and look at the other 10 years, what's interesting is that's going to argue that the yield will average right about, imply about a 166.4 yield, which is pretty close to what the average trade guess is. So, you know, that'd be what we're looking at just based on history. About a 166 yield is what we would expect them to come out with, is what we're thinking.
You know, the one thing to add a little bit to this, Todd, is that we got to remember that 170.7 yield they started with, and Ellen was right talking about, they do include planting date, but it also includes July temperature and precip data in that too. And, you know, there's enough anecdotal reports out there about, you know, problems with some of the pollination and ear sizes in a broad part of the Midwest itself. You know, you really don't know what kind of ear weight they put against that population count. So I think you got to understand that 170.7 isn't a pure linear trend. It's a weather adjusted trend. So if they step back to a pure linear trend, you know, they may go down a little bit from that even.
They will have an ear weight, if I remember correctly, or should. And in this
they
one,
don't,
it'd
they don't
be an estimated ear weight. Right.
It's an estimated ear weight. That's correct. You know, and they have latitude on what they want to use for an ear weight, because they have no actual physical measurement at this point yet.
With the exception that they'll measure ear length, in terms of, no, they do. Schleusner, in his conversation with me earlier in the week, and I'll post that up to the website at willag.org, has a discussion about what it is that they'll be measuring, and length of ear is one of the things that they do take in this time around, and so they're consequently ear number of ears and length of ear both. But you can go listen to it on our website at willag.org. So there are a lot of numbers that'll be calculated into this. Should make, I suppose, Dale, for a really interesting Thursday morning at 11 o'clock next week.
It's not going to be a calm morning, let's put it that way. Or it can be. If numbers are on par, it can be. But, you know, the other thing that you got to deal with in here, it's just like we had after the July report, which really was kind of a benign report, you know, and we got it out at 11, and then we had the noon weather model runs, and bang, you know, we had things shift gears on us real quick for something that wasn't even tied to the report. But I think where we have these corn futures back down against the June low, and as you look at that June low, it still counts best as a good cycle low. We're in a window now for one of the breakdowns of that, a 6 to 7 week low here at this point. So, you know, I'm really not expecting anything really bearish out of the report next Thursday, you know. So it's really going to be a matter of how aggressive do they get and what does the trade feel about the numbers they put out.
Ellen Dearden, we've heard, speaking of aggressive, and I want to switch to soybeans this time around, that producers were aggressive sellers of new crop soybeans earlier in the year. Do you think that really was the case?
If it was the case, aggressive, we need to take with a grain of salt, because I think it was probably in the 20 to 25% range. But I also believe that it was probably 10% on corn. So aggressive is relative.
From your perspective there in McHenry, Jim, how do you see it?
I would say to you, Alan's right. We probably, you know, I know Allendale, we came out very strong in January telling customers, you need to get a hedge, you need to get a hedged. And I would guess maybe we were about 30%. I know guys are very hesitant because of what happened the year before. A lot of the industry was really, you know, thought the beans would not rally as much as they did. So I think the farmers on these beans really took it with a grain of salt, even though the industry was saying, hey, they're $10 beans, you better take advantage of it. They had a second crack at it here the last couple weeks, and I know a lot of my customers are just a little bit hesitant to, because the weather's still going to dictate it right now. So that's going to be the key, is the weather. And, you know, if we don't get the rains here in the latter part of August, I think the farmers is just going to bull them up even that much more and try to be holders in all the way into the wintertime if they can.
Yeah, given that, so the weather, but that's weather as it relates to production, Ellen Dearden, it actually comes down to what we think the ending stock number for both this year and next year will be. The WASDE report is due out next week as well on Thursday morning. Do you expect much change there?
Well, let me just say that the stocks of corn are considerable in the Western Corn Belt. We're talking 2016 crop corn, large in the Western Corn Belt. That's all going to get dumped together as we begin harvest in the Delta. And so we're just all crop corn. But my expectations are that our bean ending stocks are probably slightly less on the 16 crop, slightly less than what USDA's been projecting. And heck, I don't know, because new crop ending stocks are very, very dependent on what kind of production we have. I think our total use on corn in all categories is probably about right, but we're going to see a lot of shuffling between feed and ethanol and industrial uses of corn as well as exports. Beans, I think, USDA just continues to underestimate use. And unless we have a serious trade war with China, as Dale pointed out, that we're probably the best supplier of high-quality protein to China, unless we have a export war, we probably have ending stocks of beans dropping considerably.
Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I really do. You know, I saw one wire service story here just a little bit ago. The trade's generally thinking the new crop bean stocks number is going to be just over 430 million bushel, you know, and that's really not necessarily really a negative number. The other thing that's in the mix here that people need to keep abreast and keep in mind at this juncture is that even though we're carrying around the world comfortable, albeit not really that heavy of a bean inventory or oilseed inventory, the one thing that's going on that people aren't really watching real closely is that for the last now 6 weeks, the Brazilian real has been steadily grinding upward, and we're getting to a point here. We're not far away from where the peak was that winter, last winter. So if we continue to see the real itself grind its way upward, and if we get over a new high, what that means is prices in the interior of Brazil stay soft, stay weak. That's a deterrent when we start looking at what they are going to plan to do as far as new crop planting, and also is a deterrent to selling activity coming out of South America. So if we find these kinds of factors stay in the mix, China has nowhere to go other than to come to the U.S. and buy the beans.
What do you make then of the stories that farmers in Brazil in particular will return to soybeans rather than planting corn acres?
Yeah, there are some what that really is entailed right now is the first crop corn. And that's a lot smaller corn crop down in Brazil than their second crop corn is. So, you know, I don't know that it's going to be a huge shift in acreage, but, you know, at this point, I think it's going to be there. The one thing that I think is guiding part of that, number one, is costs of putting corn in the ground are high relative to beans. And here, as you have the real working upward, the input costs for corn in Brazil continue to work upwards as well. And, you know, it's a higher cost crop than beans, especially in those southern states where the bulk of the first crop corn itself is planted. So I think that'll happen to a degree, but, you know, in defense of beans, what we've got to remember is last year's yields were exceptional, you know, and so even though we're going to have potentially a bit larger acreage, and it'll be in some of the southern states primarily, you have to start to ratchet your expectation of yield back from what we had a year ago somewhat too. So, you know, we've seen some early estimates that have been as big as last year as far as the crop. I know that's where Sapras and Mercado was. They were a little over 113 million ton. But the USDA, I think it is somewhere around 107 million ton. And basically, I think a lot of that is acknowledging, you know, yields were that good down there last year, and the odds are may not be quite that good this year.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the graphics I've seen from CONAB, which is the Brazilian counterpart to the United States Department of Agriculture, on their first and second crop corn. And if I remember correctly, you're right that They have just been trending lower in that first crop acreage as they've figured out how to really produce with the second crop corn. So you're probably correct in the way that's playing out, and sounds maybe more that's like a nature rather as opposed to a material or money driven experience there. So what now should we talk about as...
Well, their first crop corn, it needs to be noted, their first crop corn is primarily a crop they use for internal domestic feeding. The second crop corn is primarily an export crop. And that just fits in with the rotation and use of your transportation / export facilities, which as they're harvesting their first crop corn, they're harvesting their beans at the same time. Your beans really overload your export capacity, so their corn exports are coming later. So it's a matter of what they're seeing, perceiving as far as needs for feed down there.
And this is in large part because they don't have storage facilities to hold a bean crop very long, at least, other than bags. And I suppose they mostly use that for corn, too. But we'll see in the future if and how that might change. So back here to the United States, anything that farmers should be considering at this time, Ellen Dearden, and maybe more likely the better question is, what are they asking you about when they're faced with decisions this week?
The biggest questions I've had this week have revolved around old crop corn, what to do with it, how to handle it. And I've still got some left. And not all those questions are coming from Nebraska and South Dakota either. They're coming from Illinois. So I think that there's a lot of corn that will get lugged into the new crop year just because the carry does favor holding it into December or January, selling it for that delivery. Even if you're paying a new ins charge of 12 or 13 cents.
Does that tell you that basis will widen even more than expected this fall?
I think basis will widen as we get into... Right now, the basis for Dece Jan is pretty darn good on corn. So I think we can expect to see that basis widen as guys get in the field and want to sell corn, not off the combine, but for some in the future delivery.
Anything, Jim, that you want to take up that I haven't asked you about yet?
No, the one thing I was going to just point out, just we were talking about the exports, we're looking here at Allendale. We're a little bit leery about the pace right now that we're telling customers to keep an eye on. Right now, if you look at the new crop bookings this week, they're 235 million bushels. They're at 10-year lows. It's the same thing for corn. So we are really off to a very slow export pace for both corn and beans. And it's something we're kind of keeping an eye on. I'm a little bit optimistic in the long run. Like you were pointing out, the dollar real's going up and the dollar's making new lows. We're at the lowest we've been in over a year since the election of President Trump. And hopefully that's going to bring these export sales back around. But with that big competition out in Brazil, in Brazil and Argentina, we are a little bit leery that the government may be a little bit too optimistic on new crop export bookings. But the good news is we got plenty of time to catch up on those sales. But it's something we're just kind of keeping an eye on for the long term.
I've been watching that too, and I think one of the things with this weak dollar and a generally declining price and feeling that the crop sizes are at least holding steady, there's not a lot of incentive for an importer to go ahead and price corn or soybeans at this stage of the game. So I'm not quite as concerned about those new crop bookings being slow.
Dale Durkles, I'm wondering about Ohio and Indiana. We hear often about the Western Corn Belt, Southeastern Iowa being dry. We heard early on about the problems that the Eastern Corn Belt had, in particular Indiana, parts of Ohio. Not a lot since then. Has their crop come along far enough, or are they fairly damaged?
You've got issues out there, and there's no way you can get around it. And the one thing, and it was just kind of an illustration of the situation, I saw a picture of a cornfield out in Ohio. I don't remember if it was earlier this week or late last week. And actually, that particular cornfield is what I call mid-calf high. And you know, it isn't so much that we were wet, it's how much of that crop out there ended up getting replanted. And every time you replant, you know, you force your maturity that much later again. Either that or you're planting a short season variety and you compress your window for that crop to really mature on a normal pace, even with a shorter season variety. So I think you've got to start out with a lower yield. And I saw, and I don't have those right off of my head, but I saw some yield estimates from one of these satellite firms here over the last week, you know, and when you looked at Indiana and when you looked at Ohio, you know, you saw yield expectations out there. Here they are. They were roughly at 179 in Illinois, Indiana 160, Ohio 164. So, you know, it's this lateness of planting and the extreme wetness that they've had out there. It's going to have repercussions. You know, I think everybody's kind of lost sight of it, because really the more dire problems were occurring out in the Dakotas and the northwestern parts of the Corn Belt.
Let's close out our time together now, as usual. We'll get a final word from each of you. Ellen Dearden from AgriView, I think we'll start with you this afternoon.
I can't be too disappointed with the way the corn market has acted over the last week's time, given that I've got a pretty considerable cycle low expected right here around the crop report next week. So this mid 370s range for December corn has been supportive this summer. I think it will continue to be.
Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
I think one of the more interesting things is the conundrums that the world financial, government financial officials are having around the world and trying to decide how do they proceed forward on monetary policy itself. And it got thrown another left hook this week. There was a report out on global inflation. It was the lowest since 2009. So all this money they've been pumping into the system, we still haven't gotten an adequate price response. And they're not sure about what do we do, because I think all of them would like to raise rates, but they're looking for the inflation numbers to start to pick up, and they're just not doing it.
And Jim McCormick, who is with Allendale, and Jim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you again for having me. I'm going to kind of talk a little about corn. I think they are going to lower this corn yield next week, and I think it's going to be the first part of a process that's going to continue throughout the year or throughout the fall. And I think overall this crop's probably going to get smaller. I do believe that the eastern Corn Belt's going to struggle. The heat in the west during pollination is going to show up. And it's one of those situations I wouldn't be surprised to see. We see the smallest crop size of the year not show up to the January report. So I am friendly to the corn, but it's going to be a grind. It's not going to happen overnight. It may take multiple months, but I do think this crop's going to get smaller. And hopefully the market will reward that and we'll get some higher prices for the producers out there.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org, in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. Thanks to our panelists this week, including Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Jim McCormick, he's with Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.